And now, In-Flight Entertainment is proud to present Marauder Radio.
Oh, you men are all alike. 7 or 8 quick ones and you're off with the boys to boast and brag. You better keep your mouth shut. Oh, I think I love him.
Maybe we should chug on over to Mamby Pamby Land, where maybe we can find some self-confidence for you, you jackwagon.
You may be right.
Oh, it looks good on you, though.
I may be crazy.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the host of Marauder Radio, your lunatic lover and poet, Mr. Bob Zema.
Hello, everybody. Hello, hello, and hello. And how is everybody doing this evening? Oh, wait a minute here. We got to change microphones. Let's see. Hopefully that's working. Hopefully that is working. Hopefully we're getting our audio. I didn't have the right device set up. This device is currently in use. Let's see. Might be not even using the right microphone today, folks. Could be using the microphone, not this beautiful microphone that you can see on the live YouTube stream, but it could be the microphone that that is connected to the computer. Let me see. Let's see here. Oh, hello, everybody. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not quite sure. Let's see. Anyways, let's not worry about it. Let's just hope to God that everything is recording and working well on the showgram today. You know, I want to talk about drawing a line in the sand and then communicating that parameter, right? Drawing a line in the sand and communicating that parameter. I'm not sure this microphone is working for those of you watching on the YouTube stream. But if you are, awesome. I'm glad you're watching on the YouTube stream. But let's talk today about whether or not you draw a line in the sand, right? We create a parameter. Now, there's a big confusion between what people call boundaries versus a parameter, right? A boundary, as we discussed in the previous show, in fact, last week, a boundary is an agreed upon, negotiated rule of engagement, right? It is a rule that you and others establish for the purpose of having stability, accountability, predictability in your relationships. Boundaries are very healthy. Boundaries are very important. But at the end of the day, it's negotiated. It's two people coming together to have an understanding, to drive relational dynamics that are predictable, that drive stability, both emotional and behavioral, and help people get what they want from their relationships. Now, a perimeter, like a fence line or a stone wall you put up or a corral that you put up around your paddock or whatever it is, a perimeter, a fence line, is designed by you, placed by you, communicated by you for the purpose, the sole purpose of creating safety and health and efficiency in your world. Other people may disagree with where you're putting this fence, right? The old notion of good fences make great neighbors. And so sometimes putting the fence in means that the safety you're creating for yourself actually leads to stability and predictability in another relationship, even if you're not negotiating that boundary. But what is a fence line? What is a perimeter? You set it up for yourself because you want to make sure that you're safe. For example, you're early in recovery. You just got out of your 28-day program. You're doing AA. You're 30 days in. It's the summer. You want to have a barbecue because you want all your family and friends to come over and hang out with you. But you set a perimeter. You create a fence line. You say, no booze, no alcohol whatsoever at my home and my barbecue. You set that line in the sand. You let the others that you are inviting know There's no BYOB. There will be no booze. It'll all be alcohol-free refreshments. People can then decide, do they want to respect that line in the sand? Do they want to respect that fence line? Or are they going to just plow right through it? If they plow right through it, they're just a jerk, an a-hole, right? And that's not what you're looking for when it comes to friendships. Because what you've done now is you've set up that perimeter, you've set up that fence line, and you've communicated it. That's the single most important piece. Have you communicated your fence line? Have you communicated where you want that safety to start, right? And when you say, come to my barbecue, but don't BYOB, don't bring your own bottle, don't bring your own drinks. This is going to be an alcohol-free party. When you communicate that expectation, you communicate where that line in the sand is, you've done everything you can to be healthy and effective within that relationship. Anybody that blows through that, anybody that doesn't give a shit, anybody that just kind of says, screw it, man, I'm bringing my own alcohol. I don't care what Bob says. I'm not going to a barbecue without having my beers. That person, get them the heck out of your life as soon as you can. Anybody that runs through a perimeter, anybody that runs through a fence line or a line in the sand that you have efficiently and effectively communicated for the purpose of creating your own health, if they don't pay attention to that, well, then doggone it, get rid of them. Get rid of them. On your side of the street, the important thing is you need to communicate your expectations, where that perimeter is, and the consequences of somebody violating your expectations and violating your perimeter or line in the sand. Hey, man, let me tell you what I expect here. No alcohol. I'm early in sobriety. I don't want alcohol. I want everybody to be alcohol-free at this party. That's an expectation. You're entitled to it, but you have to communicate it. People can't mind read. People aren't going to just know because they care about you and because they remember that you came out of rehab 30, 45 days ago or so. They're not thinking that way. You have to communicate no alcohol. Create that barrier. Draw that line in the sand. Let people know that if they violate that, your expectation is they will leave, that this is a non-alcohol party. So again, draw lines in the sand to create safety in your world, but communicate them. Share your expectation with family, friends, coworkers, whomever, and also communicate your expectation of what you will do if those boundaries are violated. Perimeters are important. You need to set things up sometimes to protect yourself. Keep things out, keep things in. But it is always your responsibility to negotiate that with people.
And there's a carnival-like atmosphere here tonight. The crowd is gathered, and, well, you can feel it.
Eddie Shore?
Oh, piss on Eddie Shore.
Old-time hockey?
Piss on old-time hockey! You're ruining it!
Have a nice day.
I'm telling you, he jumped it.
Sure did, huh?
I mean, gloves off, stick down, no warning. He challenged the Chiefs.
Call his name.
Call his name!
The toughest team in the Federal League. Not this. Bunch of...
They are just a bunch of fences.
Everybody is just on their feet screaming, kill, 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 this is hockey!
We could all land in the clinker for this.
Performance tonight has got to be a bitter disappointment to these 4,000-odd Charlestown fans who have packed this war memorial and paying good money to witness this fiasco.
Excuse me, what the hell's going on out here?
Well, Nuke scared because his eyelids are jammed and his old man's here. We need a live rooster? We need a live rooster to take the curse off Jose's glove, and nobody seems to know what to get Millie or Jimmy for their wedding present. Is that about right?
That's right.
We're dealing with a lot of shit.
You may be right. I may be crazy. Oh, but
seven or eight quick ones and you're off with the boys to boast and brag. You better keep your mouth shut.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, the Bob Zemo Radio Showgram is proud to present to you insights and commentary from a fat guy in spandex. Oh, God.
Hello, everybody, and good morning, and welcome to Marauder Radio for Mental Wellness Live. I am a fat guy in spandex. It's such a beautiful image. This is why it is done mostly on radio. As a fat guy in spandex, I'm here to tell you that I've lived a lot of social things, or I should say I've lived a lot of experiences that could be considered, you know, highly social and fun and all sorts of stuff. But let me get into it. The reason I'm here today is that I want to talk about this concept, social construction of putting, you know, relationships together, that it's not what you say, it's often how you say it. Let me give you an example. One day when I was at work, I went over to a female coworker of mine and I said, "Hey, boss says you and I need to come together at some point before the end of the day. You and I need to sit down and have a chit-chat. And so, hey, why don't we do it over lunch and make it a little more casual, and that'll give us an opportunity to kill two birds with one stone." You see, it's how you say things, right? It's like when you go up to a complete and utter stranger and say, "Hi, would you mind if I sit right next to you, shoulder to shoulder, really close for the next several hours? We won't say anything." Of course, I'm talking about what it's like to be in the middle seat of an airplane. But in the previous example, or the first example, where I talked to my coworker, she, for some reason, misunderstood my desire to kill two birds with one stone. And that is by the two of us going out for lunch to have this business meeting that our boss wanted us to have. For some reason, and according to the human resource manager, she felt as though I was trying to get her to go out on a date on company time, when in reality, I was just trying to get the meeting handled while we were eating so that we could kill two birds with one stone. I mean, I just wanted to leave enough time in the workday for me to get done what I needed to get done. But of course, she misunderstood. And hey, I'll own that. I'll take it. I should have been clearer. I could have said things very differently. So when I sat down and talked to my friends in human resources, they said, "Hey, dude, there's a couple of things you have to be mindful of. First is the 50-40-10 rule." And I said, "The 50-40-10 rule? What in the heck is the 50-40-10 rule?" And they said, "When you're communicating with another human being, particularly a female coworker of yours, you're going to want to watch your tone. Tone is 50%, from what I understand, of how another person interprets the intention or meaning of our communication." So what does that mean? Well, quite simply, what it means is that if I use a certain tone, some people might find my friendly and engaging tone, as I've heard this in the past, as maybe seductive. Creepy is another word I've heard. So when I say things like, "Hey, how you doing today? The boss wants us to gather together and have some time. I'm thinking lunch," that perhaps my tone should be a little different, such as, "Hey, how's it going? Boss wanted us to meet on this particular project, looking to kind of kill two birds with one stone because I know we're both busy. How would you feel about a working lunch?" Right? And I could also say, "Let's order some food in. We'll use the conference room." And instead of saying, "Yeah, we'll go grab us a couple of drinks down at the burger and beer place." So tone is what HR was telling me. They said, imagine if I have a dog. Now, I have a dog, so I didn't have to imagine too hard. But they said, go home and talk to your dog like this. Oh, you are the ugliest dog I've ever seen. Yeah, if I had a face like yours, I'd shave my ass and learn how to walk backwards. They told me, even though I was supposedly insulting my dog with that comment, my dog would be wagging its tail and maybe even trying to give me kisses because it's reacting to the tone. They also told me to go home and try this with the dog. Hey, you good dog, you're a great dog and I really appreciate your loyalty. So they said if I did something like that, even though I'm complimenting and praising the dog and being transparent and candid, I was going to scare the dog. So they said tone. I guess my tone can be creepy, off-putting at times. I'm just trying to be open and nice, but hey, what more can I say? Tone. 40%, I guess, is nonverbals, right? And so it depends on how close do you get to people. So for example, when I was trying to negotiate a business meeting with my coworker, my friends in HR said I got a little too close. They talked about social distancing, 36 inches, although I always heard now since the pandemic it's 6 feet. Some people still like to maintain that with me, even though we have stopped using masks and all sorts of other precautions. But there's a social norm of 3 feet. If I get too close, my body language says I'm invading someone else's personal space. I'm invading their safety. And so nonverbals is 40%. Holy shnikes. 90% of how I communicate or how someone interprets my communication is driven by my tone, which is hard for me to change because I'm such a good-looking guy. Or the other piece is this whole social distancing thing. I mean, I like to touch people. I like to get close to them. It lets me know that they're listening and, you know, but again, nonverbals. Look on my face, where my eyes are looking. I guess there are times when my eyes were not in the right place and this was sending the wrong message nonverbally. So we've got 50% is tone of voice. 40% is nonverbals. Wow, that's a lot of, that is certainly a lot of community. Only 10%, they told me, is the actual words that I'm using. So when I was saying things like, you know, we could kill two birds with one stone. We go out, we grab a couple of drinks, we grab a couple of burgers, and I guess those words, even though they make sense to me, we're Farley, what does that mean? Chris Farley, I don't know. They were overridden by the nonverbals, you know, where my eyes were, where my hands were, whether I was touching somebody, or, of course, just my tone of voice, I guess, was a big issue for a lot of people. And so I'm here to tell you that learn from my supposed mistakes, from my errors, learn from my, you know, fallen ways. It's not what you say, but how you say it. Remember, tone of voice, very important. Now, if you're all jazzed up, you're feeling anxious, you're feeling overwhelmed, you're feeling sad, you're feeling a little bit down because someone hurt you, someone said something to you, or you're worried something's not going to happen, this anxiety, this fear is going to, you know, affect the tone. So be mindful of your mood, be mindful of what you're feeling, because that'll drive the tone. Same things with the nonverbals. Fidgety and anxious and nervous and you need to hand check people, you might be sending the wrong message. You know, you might be sending the wrong message. So be mindful of what you're thinking and what you're feeling because that will definitely impact almost 90% of your communication, your tone of voice, and, of course, your nonverbals. So be very cautious of that. That's what I'm going to tell you. Remember, it's not what you say. It's how you say it that a lot of times really changes the dynamic, changes the way in which we relate with other people. Thank you.
WLAY. All right, let's pray. God of Rock, thank you for this chance to kick ass. We are your humble servants. Please give us the power to blow people's minds with our high voltage rock. In your name we pray. Amen.
As long as there's, you know, sex and drugs, I can do without a rock and roll.
Marauder Radio, starring Bob Zima, Pirate King of the Hole in the Soul crew, will continue in just a moment.
You cheat.
Play that funky music, right?
Pirate.
Hey everybody, it's Bob Zima, and I just want to tell you about my brand new psychological masterpiece. That's right, I wrote a book, and it's called Toilet Therapy, Healing Anger.
Do not go in there.
Woo!
It's a crapper companion guide, and it's designed to help you remove the crap from your soul while you're, well, you know, doing your business in the library.
There is a tiger in the bathroom!
You can be the tiger in the bathroom that takes care of that roaring lion and tiger out in your real world. You'll spend hours and hours on the toilet with my crapper companion guide, learning how to heal your anger and improve the quality of your life.
Ha! Yeah, I believe you did tell your soul to the devil.
Cruise on over to BobZima.com to get your copy of Toilet Therapy Healing Anger and start your healing process today.
Who does number two work for?
Don't get me wrong, he seems like a nice guy, but my father's a nice guy, and he's not funny either.
If this is some kind of practical joke, it's not funny.
Don't you know a joke when you hear one?
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
You're going to need a bigger coach.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I want to thank my good friend, the fat guy in spandex, for coming by and helping us understand that it's not often what you say, but how you say it that matters when it comes to relationships. Yes, indeed. In his own unique way, he shared the 50-40-10 rule, which is a really good rule if you're looking for ways to improve your relationships. If you want to improve the relationships you have with family, friends, coworkers, partner, spouse, whomever, kids, remember that it's not what you say. It's often how you say it, right? Even in my own relationships, I've often gotten the feedback that the people will say to me, they'll say, Bob, it was your tone, man. It was the tone you took. And that from the very beginning, they hear that tone and their brain begins to yell, danger, Will Robinson, danger. They hear my tone, they hear the volume, they hear the pacing, and all of a sudden they just kind of take a step back, right? Tone communicates a lot, right? Am I a creepazoid? Am I charged up? Am I, you know, threatening? Am I calm? Am I soothing, right? Tone. Like if I'm talking on the radio and I have a very good volume, or I'm talking to you, I'm talking on the radio right now. But if you and I are in a conversation, we're trying to collaborate and negotiate something, if my tone is calm and soothing, if my volume is regulated, if the pace is appropriate, that two parts of your brain are going to indicate that I'm a non-threat. But if I come across as creepy or jazzed up or energized or what do I want to say, just coming at you with both barrels, your brain's going to yell, danger, danger, and you're going to respond. You're not going to be listening to me. So it's often what you say, not how you say it, that, of course, makes a world of difference, people, when we're communicating with anybody in our life, anybody. So very important, the 50-40-10 rule. Remember that it's tone, volume, pacing, right? Kind of, I like the dog example that the fat guy in spandex gave us. And then 40% is nonverbals, right? Are you standing there rolling your eyes? Are you even looking at somebody? Do you have your arms crossed, right? Are you open? Is your body positive? A lot of this communicates stuff to people. And when someone feels threatened or in danger, which would be the same thing as threatened, if they feel threatened, they're concerned, they're worried, they're caught off guard, there's a bad vibe, they're not going to listen to you. And they're not listening to you is going to drive you a little batty because your brain is doing the same thing. You're picking up on their tone, their nonverbal cues, and things just keep ratcheting upward. The communication goes sideways. The relationship gets all messed up. And so remember, it's not what you say, but how you say it that really matters. Hey, my friend Bobby Redneck's coming by in just a second.
Personally, I give us one chance in three.
You figured, oh, here's a loser, you know, a deadbeat.
Well, aren't you?
Well, yeah.
Every day's a gamble. I figure if I wake up in the morning, I'm a winner.
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
Green Acres is the place. Living is a life for me. Land spreading out to far and wide. Keep Manhattan, just give me that countryside.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Bob Zima Radio Showgram is proud to present to you the insights, thoughts, and commentary of Mr. Bobby Redneck.
I've been living fast forward. Hillbilly rock star out of control.
Now I can be sweet and I can be mean. I still got my hat and I still wear my jeans. My shades are chrome, my guitar steel. If you think I won't, then believe me, I will. Get down on you, baby, cause I ain't no rookie. I'll put it apart and I was born to boogie.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for a very interesting, very intoxicating, very exciting. Oh, for goodness. It's a simple redneck country guy. Folks, this guy's got some interesting thoughts, ideas, and concepts on how to deal with the bullshit of life. Let's not waste any more time. Let's bring to the radio microphone Mr. Bobby Redneck.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Holy shnikes. It's good to be back on Marauder Radio with my friend Bob Zima. Woo! He's a good boy. He's a good boy. What the hell is wrong with me there? Holy shnikes. A little bit too much of the old Kentucky bourbon last night. Putting some beer in there. Very good. Little Kentucky bourbon in my beer. And oh my gosh. No tears in that beer, that's for sure. Feeling really good. Speaking of tears in your beer, folks, I want to talk about something that I heard on the radio, a different radio show, but I was listening to the radio, and I heard somebody talk about this new concept, this new theory of what's happening in the world today called trauma dumping. I don't know if you ever heard about this trauma dumping, but I guess it's a lot like where I live out here in the country when people just come by with their F-150s. Or the Chevy Silverados, and they just sort of throw all of the stuff they're discarding, all of the crap of their life, all of the stuff they don't need or want anymore, and they just dump it. Side of the road, an open field, my yard, somebody else's yard. You know what I'm talking about. You may even know people who are guilty of this absolutely heinous social crime, which is just taking all the stuff in their life that they don't want and dumping it on someone else's property. Perhaps you've had somebody that has been out, you guys have been out working in the yard, or somebody came by to visit. They were working in their yard or their fields or working out in their paddocks, and they come into your house. They don't take off their shoes, and they just track mud right in through your house. That's trauma dumping too. Somebody comes over to your house, your space, your safe place, and they just track mud all through your house. completely oblivious, not giving a crap. In fact, maybe there is some crap in that mud that they're tracking through your house. And I started to think about this whole idea of trauma dumping. And then I started to think of a good friend of mine who every time we're down at the bar, we're working in the yard or we're working in the barn on the tractor or we're working with some bulls, this cat is always complaining, always belly aching, always feeling bad about his world, his life. And it gets to the point where I just want to punch this sucker in the face. I am just so tired of listening to his sorry sob-ass world and sorry sob-ass life. I'm like, come on, dude. Why do you always have to bring me down? Why do you always have to dump this crap on me? Why don't you go find a therapist? Why don't you go find a counselor? Shoot, why don't you go talk to the pastor? Why is it always me? Yakety yak. I don't get to talk back. It's like nonstop with this dude. If it ain't his girlfriend, it's his boss. If it ain't his boss, it's about how he got screwed and had to leave college because someone in his family got sick and he could never afford to go back or never had the time. I mean, oh my God, really? You know, it's about his girlfriend who stepped out on him. I mean, I realize that sucks. It does. It sucks when your girlfriend steps out on you. When you got an a-hole boss. I mean, I'm not saying the guy doesn't experience some painful times. I'm not saying the guy doesn't have a good reason to howl at the moon and shake his fist at the sky and perhaps have one too many adult beverages on the weekend. He's got cause, but I mean, really, it just gets to the point where I feel like I'm his, garbage can and he just dumps on me. So then I finally started talking to my own pastor about this, and my pastor said that I needed to establish something called boundaries. I needed to establish some kind of wall, so to speak, to say, hey, dude, you know, this is not what I like. Now, in listening earlier to Bob's show last week, he talked about putting up a fence line. And there's a couple of things I want to do with that fence line with my trauma dumping friend, and the first is, I want to keep all of his toxic crap out. Well, I shouldn't say all. I want to be empathetic. I want to be supportive, but there's a point, right? So I'm going to build about a 3-foot wall, which will keep 3 feet of his, you know, crap on the outside. My problem is what happens when it starts to go 4 foot, 6 foot, and then comes into my yard again. But I need to build some kind of fence line here. I was told, hey, I got to communicate effectively. I got to say, hey, like Bob was saying at the beginning of this show, right, set a parameter. When I'm dealing with this trauma dumper, when I'm dealing with the person who just sort of tracks mud throughout my house, I need to speak up. I need to start talking about what I need, even if this guy's not going to listen. It gets to the point where I just need to say, hey, dude, listen. I love you. I care about you. I love you like a brother. I want to be supportive. I want you to feel comfortable. I want you to feel that you can talk to me. But dude, you know, every time, every place, the barn, the field, at work, at the bar, really? I mean, let's pick a different channel here. Let's find something else to talk about. You know, I'm one of those nice guys, right? Easy going, like everybody, tend to have a positive, optimistic look on the world. But at the end of the day, when people are just coming into my world and dumping, 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 people are coming into the world and taking advantage of my ability to empathize, taking advantage of my ability and desire to want to help people, you know what that builds? That builds a whole pile of resentment, just like a whole big pile of, you know, bull. You know what I'm talking about. It just builds, right? And all of a sudden, I go from this guy that wants to help people, guy that wants to listen, guy that wants to be there. You don't want to be that guy, that decent friend, the friend who cares, the friend who's there for you, the friend at 4 a.m. when your car doesn't start at the late hour bar, you call and I come out with my truck and jumper cables and I get you going. That's me. I want to be that guy. But sometimes there are these trauma dumpers that just create so much frustration in me that I become resentful, and then I become the a-hole because I yell, I push back, I get so frustrated, so annoyed, so resentful because I'm so hurt that somebody would take advantage of me like that, would take advantage of my natural personality and all that stuff. And so what do? I push back. And then I feel guilty. So I got the trauma dumper taking advantage of me, building resentment. I respond because I'm already on the edge. And then I feel bad. I feel guilty because I yelled at somebody who was having a bad day. And I yelled at them because I can't stand or take their crap anymore. Sound familiar? Yeah. Trauma dumpers, they're everywhere, right? Whether it's people dumping their trauma about their childhood or their current life or how they're never going to get anywhere. They're never going to, you know, be able to do X, Y, Z, and they're bitching and moaning and complaining. You know who they are in your life. And it's hard, right? Because you want to care for them. You want to be there for them. You like them. But when it's, you know, 24/7 of bitch and moan and complain and just dump all their crap on you, it's enough to, you know, drive you bananas. Like, imagine if that friend just came every day and dumped all their garbage, all their refuse, everything they didn't want in their life, they dumped it right on your lawn. Eventually, I think you'd go out there with a shovel, or eventually you'll put up a fence or a video camera and you'll go to them and say, hey, you're illegally dumping. If you don't stop, right, we start to create a perimeter. We start to express our expectations, as Bob was saying earlier. Yep, dealing with a trauma dumper can be really difficult, people. It can be really hard. Because for many of us, we really like people. We really want to be that friend, that brother, that sister, that parent, that neighbor, right? We want to be the neighbor that, you know, brings lemonade over on a hot day and checks in with people, who says, hey, how you doing? But when trauma dumpers take advantage of that compassion, trauma dumpers take advantage of that empathy, and they know that we're going to listen and they take advantage of it, boy, that drives deep resentment. And that deep resentment, when it comes out, oh, man, because what is anger? Anger is the sound of hurt and fear leaving our soul. And what is resentment? Resentment is a whole lot of hurt. And fear, of course, that that person in your life ain't going to change. You're hurt because they're taking advantage of you and you know they're not going to change. And my friend, the trauma dumper knows, no matter where we are, like I said, the bar, the field, the barn, or just the other day was just at the end of church. You know what I mean? They're just going to keep doing it. So I got to man up, I got to cowboy up, and I got to set myself a perimeter. Try to be compassionately empathetic, right? Well, no, that's the same thing. Try to be compassionately and empathetically confrontational, right? I'm not a big confrontation person, but I got to set up that boundary. I got to set up that barrier. I got to say enough's enough. And so that's hard. But to be empathetic and to be compassionate while you confront, okay, there's a skill. I'm going to have to give that one some thought and come back to the Bob Zima Show and talk a little bit about that later. So thanks for listening to me at this point, people. Have a great day.
What the hell's going on out here?
This underwear feels kind of sexy.
Well, he really hit the shit out of that one, didn't he?
He held it like an egg.
Yeah, and he scrambled the son of a bitch. Look at that, he hit the full. Gotta get some free steak.
You're listening to Marauder Radio with your host, the pirate king of the hole in the soul crew, Mr. Bob Zima.
Have a quick word of prayer.
Oh, let's not.
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry.
Because his eyelids are jammed in his old man's head. We need a live rooster. Is it a live rooster? We need a live rooster to take the curse off Jose's glove, and nobody seems to know what to get Millie or Jimmy for their wedding present. Is that about right?
That's right.
We're dealing with a lot of shit.
Hi, everybody. It's Bob Zima, and I want to tell you about my healing video, Grief is Like a Vacuum, It Sucks, that is available on Amazon's Instant Video Store. here's what it's all about.
You know, grief is like a vacuum, because it sucks. We sense when a storm is coming. Nobody wants to be known as a griever. We know when a storm is coming. We do everything in our life to avoid grief. And sometimes we just stay out in the rain. We go out of our way to avoid the pain of loss and the process of grief. And get out of the rain and get out of the storm and find that shelter and that hope.
Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm.
First and foremost, grief, the thing we all dread, the thing we all try to stay away from, is a healing process. This video is designed to help you develop your own unique style and process of grieving. It's about you discovering how you heal. This video is going to challenge you to find the grieving processes and the coping techniques that are going to work best for you.
You can buy my video or simply rent it via the Amazon Instant Video Store, and it's just a couple of bucks. Hey, for a couple of dollars, will you start your healing today? Cruise on over to BobZima.com to find out how you can download or purchase Grief is Like a Vacuum, It Sucks.
All right, and we are back, everybody. Welcome back to the beautiful Grumpy Gator Cafe. My name is Bob Zima, and you are listening to Marauder Radio for Mental Wellness Live. Every Sunday at 9 a.m., I do a live podcast, but it's also a live radio show, which means if you're listening at this time, you want to call in, share your thoughts on the showgram today, or just share your thoughts in general, although please be on topic. You can call me at 515-605-9800. Again, 515-605-9800 is the studio call-in number. If you want to be a part of the showgram, please jump onto the world's largest therapy couch and reach out to us. Share your thoughts. Share your ideas. And I have to admit, I like what Bobby Rednick was saying there. I mean, we all can probably relate to a friend of ours that does a lot of trauma dumping. It's kind of an interesting world we live in, isn't it? That we have a phrase like trauma dumping. And of course, you're going to have the complete opposite side of the coin, in where people are going to be talking about how their trauma is so bad, they can't even go into a Denny's without bringing their support animal, which happens to be a boa constrictor. And so there you are trying to enjoy your Denny's breakfast because, hey, let's be honest, if you're looking for a good breakfast at a low price, Denny's is the way to go. Free advertising for Denny's. But I'll tell you something, there's nothing like, I don't even know if they have Grand Slam anymore. I mean, the last time I was in there, I think they still do. I also get confused between Denny's and IHOP. I love them both, so let's give IHOP a plug. But when you're going into a place like IHOP or Denny's, and you're just looking for a good breakfast any time of the day, right? You're just having a hunkering for breakfast food, even at dinner time. You're just wanting to go in. You're wanting to have a good meal for a low price and not be bothered. But somebody who has too much trauma and needs to go to Denny's, but needs to go in with their support animal, which happens to be a constrictor, well, now it gets a little tricky. But we have a lot of that now, right? We have a lot of where we're supposed to be tolerant, where we're supposed to be thoughtful and understanding of all sorts of different ways that people want to express who they are. Which I'm all about. I think it's great. Fly your freak flag. Really do it, but also take some freaking responsibility when you hoist that flag up the flagpole. Yes, I wish Sheldon Cooper in his Fun with Flags would have talked about flying your freak flag. And there's nothing wrong with hoisting your freak flag up as high as you can get it on your flagpole and being proud of your uniqueness. But there's a world of difference between being proud and throwing it in everybody's face and making everybody else bend over backwards for you versus taking responsibility. Perhaps, maybe, if you need a boa constrictor to eat at Denny's, you might want to consider DoorDash or eat outside. And I realize, oh, no, that's too much. No, I deserve it. I have the right to go to Denny's. Yeah, but you also, I have the right to go to Denny's and not deal with your boa constrictor. Anyways, we could go for hours on that. But I think Bobby Redneck had a really good point in that when it comes to trauma dumping, if you have somebody who dumps on you all the time, if you have someone who is always bitching and moaning and complaining, well, good golly, Miss Molly, that is entirely up to you to draw that line in the sand, as I was saying earlier, to communicate your expectations. Many of us, as Bobby Redneck was saying, it's hard because we're compassionate, empathetic people. Learning empathetic confrontation is a tough psychological fitness skill, but I'll tell you something. When you can do that, your life is going to be so much better. When you can tell somebody that, hey, here's my line, here's what happens if you cross my line, you're able to do that. Remember what the fat guy in spandex told us too. Not what you say, but how you say it. So if you're already jazzed up, you're already pretty resentful and frustrated and annoyed with your friend who trauma dumps, not the time to have the conversation. But when you're calm and you're able to calmly and in a decent way, right, in a calm way, in a polite way, in an empathetic way, in a compassionate way, when you can express what you need, you're going to get what you want. A lot of people say, well, why do I have to be nice? They just come in because you're trying to get something for yourself. You're not being nice for the other person. You're being nice so that your message gets through. It's not what you say, but how you say it. You're being strategic in getting said what needs to get said. You could yell. You could rant and rave, throw your arms around like you're a big orangutan, like King Louie. Well, I'm the king of the swim, the jungle VIP. Reach the top and the top, and that's what's bothering me. You can be like that character and flail your arms all around and complain and bitch and moan and let your resentment, you know, get the better of you. Again, what did Fat Guy in Spandex say? It isn't going to be heard. Your tone, your nonverbal, going to completely shut down the trauma dumper. You're not going to get through. You're going to have to still continue to deal with their bad behavior that they justify because they've been traumatized. Good golly, Miss Molly. Be smart. Communicate calmly, efficiently, in a healthy way, because it'll get through. You'll get what you want. You'll establish that line in the sand. You'll establish that perimeter. You'll be empathetic, but you'll also be confronting, holding your line in the sand. I think that's key. Hard to do. That's like psychological fitness skills, 401, man. That is not easy to do. That's very hard to do. It is difficult to do. That is for sure. And so I like what Bobby Redneck had to say. You have to draw that line in the sand, as I was saying earlier. For the fat guy in spandex, when you draw that line, remember, it's not what you say, but how you say it. So please make sure that you're working on that how to say it kind of a thing, right? How do I get it said? How do I get it said? How do I get it said to the point where the trauma dumper will hear me? Will hear my expectations, hear what's happening to me while they trauma dump. What? Bobby Salvation is here. Let's see what he has to say.
Ready, ready, ready.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Bob Zemo Radio Showgram is proud to present Pastor Bobby Salvation.
Hello, everybody. Bobby Salvation back with you on Marauder Radio for Mental Wellness Live and coming to you from the Grumpy Gator Cafe and Church. I think that'd be a good thing. Let's turn the cafe into a church. Amen, my brothers and sisters. Get down and get back up again. You know, I like what Bob and some of the other character defects of his have said throughout the day. I have to say, I like what I'm hearing. The one thing I want to talk about today, folks, is the Christian F word. That's right. Are you ready? Cover your ears if you're too sensitive. And if you're under 18 years of age, leave the room, because I am going to utter in just a moment the Christian F word. Are you ready? Forgiveness. The Christian F word is forgiveness. There is a lot of research out there on forgiveness. A lot of trauma dumping people want other people to forgive them. Or no, wait, let me rephrase that. Sorry, folks, I screwed it up. It's a lot of trauma dumping people need others to ask for forgiveness. You need to ask for my forgiveness in order for me to feel good about myself, you son of a bitch. A little Sheriff Buford T. Justice in there. There are a lot of people who trauma dump, a lot of people who fly their freak flag less about how they're dealing with the setbacks, the pain, the loss that they've had in life, and rather they fly their freak flag that they're a victim, that they're somebody who has been wrong. And until the person who wronged them comes forward and asks for their forgiveness, they're going to continue to fly the dysfunctional, you know, freak flag of victim. They wear it like a badge. And then like my friend Bobby Redneck said, they just dump all over everybody else, looking for someone else to do their own healing for them. Forgiveness does go a long way in creating healing. But the funny part of it is we always get this wrong when we talk about forgiveness. Every research paper I read, every article, every TV show I see where forgiveness is talked about, it's always talked about from the perspective of the person who was wronged. That in order to heal, they need forgiveness. And I'm going to call BS on that. Because you don't need forgiveness in order to heal. You don't need that person who wounded you, who wounded you and hurt you to heal. Can I get an amen? You do not need the other person to ask for forgiveness for you to heal. You do not need to give forgiveness for you to heal. You can acknowledge that person hurt you, that person wounded you. You can accept that wounding was painful, that betrayal was downright soul-tearing. You can acknowledge it. You can acknowledge that someone else intentionally and purposefully hurt you. You can also acknowledge that intentional act towards you has nothing to do with your self-worth, has nothing to do with God's perception of you, because you are, in nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sanctus, an image bearer of the Most High God. Can I get an amen? If you make someone else's bad behavior about you, you are the one to blame. You are the one not moving forward with your own healing. If you need that person to come and ask for forgiveness, you're in trouble. Why are we always focused on the person who has been wounded when we talk about forgiveness? Forgiveness, when you're wounded, isn't about healing. It's about prolonging your pain. Rather, when you are wounded, you can acknowledge what happened, accept that someone else made a choice. And that choice is about them, not you. And expecting them, needing them, wanting them to come to you and ask for forgiveness, you're setting yourself up for years of pain and heartbreak. Let's flip it, though. Why is it, my brothers and sisters, why is it that when we talk about forgiveness, we're not talking about the one who made the choice that hurt other people, hurt themselves physically, emotionally, psychologically, spiritually? Why isn't the forgiveness literature
Why aren't the forgiveness sermons like I'm giving amen, brothers and sisters, right now in the Church of the Grumpy Gator Cafe? Why isn't it focused on the offender? Why aren't we talking about the healing qualities that humbling yourself and asking for forgiveness is a part of that process? For those of my friends who have been around the tables of AA, you know step nine. You know what step nine is all about. That is what forgiveness, my brothers and sisters, is really all about. It's about someone saying to another, I hurt you. I am over. I am an a-hole for what I did. It's acknowledging and accepting your own behaviors, your own choices, or at least acknowledging. The accepting part is understanding, having the awareness and the insight that what you chose to do, how you did it, hurt someone else. And when you can own that side of the street, when you can do that work, healing comes. A lot of us don't get healed, find healing, because it's often disguised as work. For the wronged, the work is acknowledging what happened, accepting that it had nothing to do with you and your worth and your value. That betrayal is not a reflection of you, your values, your morals, your relationships. Well, maybe that's not true, but it's certainly not anything not worth your value. I mean, it's not a reflection of your value. Sorry, folks, getting lost in the words here today. And for the offender, the one who did the wrong, asking for that forgiveness, acknowledging your poor choice, acknowledging how it hurt another, demonstrating remorse for that, that's healing. That's how forgiveness drives healing. For the wronged, as I said earlier, expecting someone to come to you and ask for your forgiveness so that you can heal, you're setting yourself up for a lot of pain. On the other hand, if you acknowledge what they did, you acknowledge that it wounded you, you accept that it has nothing to do with your value, your worth, whether or not you're lovable or not. That was someone else making a bad decision, which says everything about them and nothing about you unless you make it about you. And when you make it about you, that's when the only thing we know that will help is that they come and they apologize, that they ask for forgiveness. Even when they do, might feel good for a little bit, but that pain still comes back. Because forgiving them when they ask is not the key to healing. Forgiving them by understanding they made a choice, they engaged in a behavior because that says something about them and zero about me. Being able to get your head around that concept. I forgive you for this indiscretion because I realized you made a bad choice. You were in a place of pain. You were in a place of hurt, and you made a choice. It has no reflection on my value and my worth, but it did hurt like hell. And I'll tell you something. It has nothing to do with me and everything to do with you. Time for me to fly.
Here is done. I'm needed elsewhere now. I'm needed wherever outlaws rule the West, wherever innocent women and children are afraid to walk the streets, wherever a man cannot live in simple dignity, and wherever a people cry out for justice.
Bullshit!